from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, so much to get to today. The Taliban has regrouped after its initial fall from power in Afghanistan, and the pace of its attacks is likely to increase this year. This, according not to some, Hate America Firster, unless the Hate America Firsters have taken over the Pentagon, because that's who's saying this. Same Pentagon that's issued that interesting report about there was no planning for after the fall of Saddam portion of the Iraq war. Maybe we should have listened to the Pentagon report offers a dim view of progress in the nearly seven-year-old war in Afghanistan. Well, thank God we didn't distract ourselves with some other, noting that insurgent violence has climbed in Afghanistan. Isn't that weird? It's going down in Iraq, and it's going up in Afghanistan. It's almost as if they can travel from one place to another. It's almost as if the insurgents go where we ain't. The report said that despite U.S. and coalition efforts to capture and kill key leaders, the Taliban is likely to, quote, maintain or even increase the scope and pace of its terrorist attacks and bombings this year. The Taliban, it said, has coalesced into a resilient insurgency. At the same time, the Afghan army and national police are progressing slowly and still lack the trainers they need. I don't think they mean the British sense of trainers, which is sneakers. This is part of the first comprehensive Pentagon report to evaluate progress in Afghanistan. Never too late, guys. 7 years in. Seven? Something like that. Yeah. Never too late to evaluate progress. Vast problems, corruption, the illegal poppy trade, human rights abuses, and slow progress in reconstruction. That seems to be a trademark. That seems to be our calling card. Slow progress in reconstruction. We're the slow progress and reconstruction people. These were detailed as well as the struggle to train and equip the Afghan army and police. Also a hallmark of our work. Slow progress in training the local army and police. Maybe it's hard. Maybe it's hard work. A lot of good people working hard. Meanwhile, next door in Pakistan, something odd is happening. From the Pakistan Post, Dr. A.Q. Khan came out of his residence in protest this week when his security officials refused to take him to his doctor, actually his dentist. He was suffering from severe toothache since late Thursday night. He demanded his security officials take him to the dentist, but they refused, saying they had no official permission. He's supposed to be under house arrest. One of the interesting things sort of almost left unsaid. I think there was one question at the State Department briefing on this subject. When the United States finally said to North Korea, okay, you're not evil. You're not in the Axis. You're not evil. God bless you. God bless you, evil man. Kim Il, whatever. And part of the deal is the North Koreans are going to turn over a lot of documents about their nuclear program. So maybe we'll find out what they bought from A.Q. Khan. Anyway, he's got a toothache. He suffered, unable to bear the pain anymore, he came out of his residence in protest and insisted on walking to the dentist himself. Security officials begged him not to leave the premises until officially allowed, so A.Q. Khan sat on the side of the road until 5 o'clock in the afternoon when 15 security men arrived to take him to a dental surgeon. The Pakistani government has rejected the demand of the United States Congress for direct access to Dr. Khan, saying only the Pakistan government could probe the allegations that he proliferated nuclear secrets. Because those are our friends. In Iraq, senior Iraqi government officials said this weekend that a U.S. Special Forces counterterrorism unit conducted a raid that killed a relative of the Iraqi prime minister. Oops. Big oops. Touching off a high-stakes diplomatic crisis between the United States and Iraq, U.S. military officials had no comment for the second day in a row. The raid occurred at dawn Friday, just as Dr. Khan was suffering his toothache, but not related, oddly enough. The relative to the prime minister had close ties to his personal security detail, according to authorities. The incident puts an added strain on U.S.-Iraqi negotiations to draft that agreement, deadline end of July. the long-term security pact that will govern the conduct of U.S. forces in Iraq. Members of the Iraqi government said the raid only deepened their reluctance to sign any agreement that did not leave Iraqis with the biggest say on when and how to conduct combat operations. "We're afraid now of signing the long-term pact between Iraq and America because of such unjustified violations by the troops," said a senior Najaf-based member of the prime minister's party. "We condemn these barbaric actions, not only when they target a relative of Maliki's, but when any Iraqi is targeted." Outrage over the mysterious operation has spread to the highest levels of the Iraqi government, which is demanding an explanation of how such a raid occurred in a province ostensibly under full Iraqi control. "This is a special forces operation, an anti-terrorist unit that operates independently, so there's been no coordination with the local forces on the ground," said a high-ranking member of the Iraqi government who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the extreme sensitivity of the issue. More extremely sensitive than AQ Khan's tooth. "That's why it's so important to have an agreement to regulate this relationship." And speaking of that agreement, who's against it and where is he? Ahmed Chalabi, and he's in Tehran. This is the guy who basically supplied us with defectors that would tell American intelligence what it wanted to hear, or certain parts of American intelligence, about Iraqi WMDs, who really thought he was going to be installed as the new prime minister after the war. It was the Pentagon's original plan, but was always under suspicion for having intelligence ties to Iran. Now he's in Tehran, according to the Iranian news agency, saying that granting immunity to U.S. military personnel under the new agreement is baldly unacceptable. Chalabi states the proposed treaty is counterproductive for Iraq in the long term. He says it will be to the detriment of the Iraqi nation, and its supporters will taint their reputation should they follow through with it. He says that in Tehran, ladies and gentlemen. It's all working out so very well. Hello, welcome to the show.
If I live next door, if I live next door, we would sleep less, but you'd see me more. If I live next door, there's one thing for sure, you wouldn't have far to score. You could bang on my wall to make a booty call if I live next door. 'Cause I'm a good neighbor, I'm a good friend, I'm a good neighbor, you're in good hands. When it starts to rain, I'll come and clean your drain. If it takes all night to tighten up your pipes, you won't hear me complain. 'Cause I'm a good neighbor, I'm a good friend, I'm a good neighbor, you're in good hands. Step into my kitchen, baby, while I whip up something fast. Stuff your oyster pie, baby, just throw the shit so no one sees our ass. Well, if I live next door, if I live next door, you can come on by, bring a friend or four. If I live next door, it's open house, baby. If I live next door, I'd like to see you a little more. Won't you be my neighbor?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, Lachaud World Headquarters, the Lachaud Dome, newly air-conditioned for my comfort, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news of the warm. There's so much this week. Won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
First, the good news. Large amounts of ozone, around 50% more than predicted by the world's state-of-the-art climate models. And America's next top climate model will be coming your way next. That is to say, large amounts of that ozone are being destroyed in the lower atmosphere over the tropical Atlantic, according to the scientific journal Nature. This startling discovery was made by a team of scientists from the UK's Center for Atmospheric Science. It has particular significance because ozone in the lower atmosphere acts as a greenhouse gas. Its destruction also leads to the removal of the third most abundant greenhouse gas, methane. This is based on the analysis of the first year of measurements from a new Cape Verde Atmospheric Observatory on the island of San Vicente in the tropical Atlantic. Alerted by these data, the scientists flew a research aircraft up into the atmosphere to make ozone measurements at different heights and more widely across the tropical Atlantic. The results mirrored those at the observatory, indicating major ozone loss. He had the command in Najaf, I believe, major ozone loss, in the remote area. What's causing the loss? The chemicals bromine and iodine oxide were detected over the region of the ocean. These chemicals produced by sea spray and emissions from phytoplankton attack the ozone and break it down. As the ozone is destroyed, a chemical is produced that attacks and destroys the greenhouse gas methane. Until now, it's been impossible to monitor the atmosphere of this remote region because of its physical inaccessibility. But maybe the plankton will save us. But maybe not. Roughly 14,700 years ago, the weather patterns that bring snow to Greenland shifted from one year to the next. A pattern of abrupt change that was repeated 12,900 years ago and 11,700 years ago when the Earth's climate became the one we enjoy today, if this is what we're doing, is enjoying. That's according to records preserved in an ice core taken from an island up north, according to Scientific American. These speedy changes, transitions from warming to cooling and back again, in the absence of changes in greenhouse gas, could presage abrupt, catastrophic climate change in our future. What made these abrupt climate changes were circulation changes, and they took place from one year to the next, more or less, says glaciologist Suni Olander Rasmussen at the University of Copenhagen. So things can happen fast in climate, even though it seems slower moving than training police and army in the countries we invade. A detailed analysis of data from nearly 50 years of weekly fish trawl surveys in Narragansett Bay and Rhode Island Sound has revealed a long-term shift in species composition. For those of you waiting for species to compose music, that's not what this is about. Scientists attribute primarily to the effects of global warming, different species in these bodies of water over time. According to Jeremy Colley at the University of Rhode Island, the fish community have shifted progressively from vertebrate species, such as fish, to invertebrates, lobsters, crabs, and squid. And from those feeding on the bottom to species that feed higher in the water column. Smaller warm water species have increased while larger cool water species have declined. This is a pretty dramatic change, and it's a pattern that's being seen in other ecosystems, including offshore and Georges Bank and other continental shelf systems, but we're in the relatively unique position of being able to document it, says Colley. Good news for oyster lovers, except what are the lobsters supposed to eat? Diseases caused by worms and parasites are draining the health and energy of the poorest Americans, said an expert. And diseases associated with the developing world, such as dengue fever and Chagas disease, may become a bigger problem for the United States as, yes, the climate changes, says Dr. Peter Hotz of George Washington University and the Sabin Vaccine Institute in Washington. I think we need more parasites. Me personally, I'm a lonely guy. The battle to reduce carbon emissions is at the heart of many eco-friendly efforts. Researchers from the University of Missouri have discovered that nature's been lending a hand. Researchers at the Missouri Tree Ring Laboratory who knew, discovered that trees submerged in freshwater aquatic systems store carbon for thousands of years, a significantly longer period of time than trees that fall in a forest, where nobody... If a tree is submerged in water, its carbon will be stored for an average of 2,000 years, says the director of the tree lab, tree ring lab. If a tree falls in a forest, the number is reduced to an average of 20 years. In firewood, the carbon is only stored for 1 year. When a tree is alive, it has a high ability to store carbon, keeping it out of the atmosphere. As it begins to decay, a tree's carbon is released back into the atmosphere. Certain conditions slow this process. This reveals the importance of proper tree disposal, as well as the benefits of forests near rivers. So drown your trees, don't burn them. Trees, shrubs, and other plants that make up mountainside forests are shifting to higher ground to escape the warming climate, researchers have now found. Common species found on mountain ranges across Europe have steadily spread to higher altitudes during the 20th century. French scientists who examined plant records for six mountainous regions said their findings point to the dramatic effect climate change is having on plant life. For the first time, we've shown that climate change is already having a significant effect on a large set of plant species. The study is particularly significant because the mountain ecosystems are not especially sensitive to climate change, unlike many other regions on the planet. This is from the journal Science. So yes, plants can migrate. Exactly 20 years after warning America about global warming, a top NASA scientist says the situation has gotten so bad, the world's only hope is drastic action. James Hansen told Congress this week the world has long passed the dangerous level for greenhouse gases and needs to get back to levels of 1988 when Michael Dukakis thought he was going to get elected. He said, Earth, that's a long time ago, just judging by the Michael Dukakis reference. He said Earth's atmosphere can only stay this loaded with man-made CO2 for a couple more decades without changes such as mass extinction, ecosystem collapse, and dramatic sea level rises. We're toast if we don't get on a very different path, Hansen says. So toast is a bad thing now. I like toast. He's director of the Goddard Institute of Space Scientists, sometimes called the godfather of global warming science. He says this is the last chance. He says coal-fired power plants that don't capture carbon dioxide emissions shouldn't be used in the U.S. after 2025, should be eliminated in the rest of the world 5 years later. Carbon capture technology is still being developed and not yet cost-efficient. Burning fossil fuels like coal is the chief cause of man-made greenhouse gases. He says the Earth's atmosphere has to get back to a level of 350 parts of carbon dioxide per million. Last month, it was 10% higher. And finally, as I said, there's a lot of news of the warm this week. Droughts and downpours exacerbated by climate change allowed two diseases to converge and wipe out large numbers of African lions in 1994 and 2001, according to a new study. In those 2 years, a perfect storm of extreme drought followed by heavy seasonal rain set up the conditions for the two diseases, a tick-borne blood parasite and a canine distemper virus, to converge. The effect was lethal. The synchronized infections wiped out about a third of the Serengeti lion population in those 2 years. Well, one was in the Serengeti, the other was in a crater whose name I can't pronounce. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. One Los Angeles dog trainer correction, because they're gonna lay off some more people. So won't be long for these kinds of errors to occur. You know, with fewer people, maybe the error rate will go down. An article in Tuesday's calendar section about celebrity photos on the walls of businesses said the tradition has been around since the time of silent film star Charlie Chan. It should have said Charlie Chaplin. Unquote. Yeah, because Charlie Chan didn't exist, would be one reason. He's a fictitious character. You know what that means, Los Angeles dog trainer. Of course you do. Ladies and gentlemen, what are the inspectors general coming up with? You might well ask. Might you well? The Bush administration has paid Pakistan more than $2 billion without adequate proof that the Pakistani government used the funds for their intended purpose, like supporting U.S. counterterrorism efforts. That's according to the Government Accountability Office. More than a third of U.S. funds provided Pakistan since 9/11 had accounting problems, including duplication and possible fraud. That's our friends in Pakistan. The Pentagon paid about $20 million for Army road construction and $15 million to build bunkers there, but there's no evidence the roads or bunkers were ever constructed, you see. Islamabad also, they're putting the bad back in Islamabad. They billed Washington $200 million for an air defense radar system that may not have met a crucial U.S. condition that reimbursement cover combat or logistical costs supporting U.S. military operations against terrorism beyond what a country would spend on its own needs. It seems as though the Pakistani military went on a spending spree with American taxpayers' wallets and no one bothered to investigate the charges, says a Democratic senator, Tom Harkin. Of course, that was when General President Musharraf was our friend. Pakistan is the largest recipient of funds as part of a terrorism effort launched in 9/11 after 9/11. Okay, that's one. The administration lacks an updated and comprehensive Iraq strategy to move beyond the surge, according to the General Accountability Office. It says many goals Bush outlined a year and a half ago in the New Way Forward strategy. Doesn't that sound Maoist? Just the slogan. New Way Forward, now! Many of those goals remain unmet. After a bleak GAO assessment of Iraq last summer, this new report cited little improvement in the ability of the Iraqi security forces to act independently of the U.S. military and noted that key legislation passed by the Iraqi parliament had not been implemented, while other crucial laws had not even been passed. Attention, Joe Lieberman was on television this morning saying, it's all good over there. Read the report of your own Government Accountability Office, sir. The report also judged the key Iraqi ministries spent less of their allocated budgets last year than in previous years, and oil and electricity production had repeatedly not met U.S. targets. And finally, from the Inspector General, the GAO is not really an inspector general. It's from the legislative side of things, but they do the same work. But this one from the Office of the Inspector General at the Department of Justice said Deputy Attorney General Michael Elston violated federal law by deselecting candidates for internships and other entry-level jobs based on their political affiliations. If they seemed liberal, they did not get selected. Highly qualified candidates with liberal or Democratic Party affiliations were deselected at a much higher rate than higher qualified candidates with conservative or Republican Party affiliations. Secondly, Elston admitted he may have deselected candidates in a few instances during their due to their affiliations with certain liberal causes. Unquote. The Inspector General of the Justice Department. So-called because it's a department. Ladies and gentlemen, last week on 60 Minutes, there was a report on the United States Arabic language television and radio stations broadcasting to Iraq. The TV station is called Al Hura, which means the free one. But there's much more that wasn't in the 60 Minutes piece, thanks to an investigative report by ProPublica, a new investigative reporting service. Says William Rue, who served as U.S. ambassador to Yemen and the United Arab Emirates, there is no adult supervision at Al Hura by people who know what is on the actual broadcast. You see, nobody who runs the place speaks Arabic. You need, he says, bilingual managers who understand both languages and cultures and understand journalism. Financial accountability also appears to be lacking. In its 4 years, the network has been unable to provide full documentation to auditors, according to a report this year by the American couple years ago by the Government Accountability Office. U.S. experts on the Arab world have long worried the network was doing little to help America's image in the region. Unpublished reports, audits, and internal government email show a steady stream of concern inside the State Department, at the government's broadcasting headquarters, and even inside the network itself that Al Hura and its radio affiliate are undermining U.S. policy goals while sometimes promoting the interests of Iran and its allies. The two services have remained impervious to reform because the Arabic language broadcasts are beamed only overseas. No one translates the full broadcast into English, making it nearly impossible for non-Arabic speakers to know what's going on the air. Despite the difficulties, Al-Hurra's budget has steadily increased. Reward on success. Or just hard work. Alberto Fernandez, an Arabic speaker who served as the top public diplomacy officer for the Middle East until recently, wrote to Karen Hughes, who was head of public diplomacy and a longtime Bush pal and advisor. He wrote that a year ago that Al-Hurra's Baghdad operation was stocked, quote, with radical Shia Islamists who favored their political brethren and discriminated against and intimidated members of other parties, unquote, or end quote, or close quote. But forget the quote. Earlier, State Department officials attributed the poor showing of Washington's preferred candidate for prime minister in the 2000 election to the negative coverage he received on Al-Hurra in favor of candidates who enjoyed support from Iran. A senior U.S. diplomat who worked closely with Karen Hughes at the time said she focused on other aspects of public diplomacy, such as exchange programs, and did not want to wade deeply into, quote, the mess Al-Hurra was in. That's Karen Hughes, ladies and gentlemen, making them love us.
History shows.
Oh, there's one here that works. This is the one. Dedicated to Karen Hughes.
Karen, do they love us again? Do they see Uncle Sam as their friend? Does their heart swell with pride knowing God's on our side? Is the whole hatred thing on the mend? Karen, do they like us some more? Do they ask for our stuff at the store? When they watch their TV, do they yearn to be free and decide to sign up for our war? There was no greater Bushy than Karen P. Hughes. Always knew how to make him look good on the news. With the whole world to win and nothing to lose. Just what they both wished. Another mission accomplished. Did she put out the fire? The fuse. Karen, do they know that we're good? Like you promised, you knew that they would. Have you banished their fear? Do they want to come here? As if they actually could. Karen, do they admit that we're nice? That we're just trying to build paradise? Have you got them convinced they were wrong to have winced when we bombed their place once or twice? Was there ever a player like Karen P. Hughes? Knew what buttons to push, what levers to use. Her slightest suggestions you could not refuse. 'Cause she stood at the nexus of everything Texas. Even Condoleezza was taking her cues. Love us. there? Do they know and care that we care? Have they finally confessed that they like us the best? To our goals, are they ready to swear? Oh, Karen, darling. You did more than your share.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, first, here's Chris Matthews from Hardball.
History shows, as recently as the 2004 election, things haven't changed that much, that the party that has the strongest suit when it comes to security issues benefits when there's stress, when there's a threat. We had a recording come out of the Obama headquarters. Not Obama, I'm sorry.
Man,
Bin Laden.
I know what you mean.
Bin Laden.
He's sorry. Top John McCain advisor Charlie Black now is backing away from his claim that a terror attack on the United States would help the McCain election. He's acknowledging he did say it. Black was quoted by Fortune magazine that should another terror attack hit, quote, certainly it would be a big advantage, unquote, to McCain. Charlie deeply regrets his comments. They were inappropriate, and he recognizes that the candidate we work for has devoted his entire adult life to protecting his country and placing its security before every other consideration. Kind of an apology. Kind of not. The Speaker of the House in Iraq, Mahmoud al-Mashadani, has issued an apology to female parliamentarians for the way they've been treated by his office. Women MPs had held a news conference to complain they'd been marginalized and subjected to political violence. They had a lot of reservations about how things were handled in Parliament, but when they spoke up, they had their views embargoed and were subjected to ridicule. Contrary to the Iraqi Constitution. Oh, yeah, that thing. Al-Mashadani's apology said the experiment in democracy was young in Iraq, and there would be many mistakes along the way, of which his behavior had been one. The arrival of President Bush into Heathrow Airport during his recent European trip threw the airport into disarray. How could they tell? Be the question. Many would ask, causing a wave of cancellations and delays. 63 flights were canceled. Hundreds more were delayed by at least 30 minutes. The decision to use one of the world's busiest airports for the entourage rather than a military airfield was condemned by the chief executive of British Airways. An airport spokesman said, "We did everything in our power to minimize disruption at the airport. Despite our best efforts, some disruption did occur, for which we apologize to passengers affected," unquote. Also in the United Kingdom, the H.J. Heinz company has pulled an ad for mayonnaise that turned out to be a little too saucy. A commercial featuring a quick smooch between a dad heading off to work and the deli guy substituting for his wife in the family kitchen, serving up sandwiches using mayo with a New York deli flavor, was meant to be humorous, according to a company spokesman. The spot lasted a few days on the air before being pulled. More than 200 complaints have been filed with the Advertising Standards Authority. Quote, "Is it our policy to listen to consumers? We recognize that some consumers raise concerns over the content of the ad. This prompted our decision to withdraw it," according to Heinz's UK Director of Corporate Affairs. Real name, Nigel Dickey. In the prepared statement, he apologized to anyone offended by the commercial. Gay groups have been offended by the pulling back of the spot and now are calling for a boycott and a girlcott. Justin Gimelstab has apologized to women's tennis, found himself suspended from the professional U.S. Tennis League, in which he plays. During a radio interview, he said that he intended to hurt Anna Kournikova next month when they meet in an exhibition match. I'm going to serve it right at the body, about 125 miles per hour, right into her midriff, he said. If she's not crying by the time she comes off court, then I did not do my job, unquote. I despise her to the maximum level just below hate, he said. And then he said some worse things. I wouldn't like to sleep with her, he said, because she's such a... I don't know if I can say this word on the radio. D blank blank C-H-E. Instead, I wouldn't mind my brother, who is kind of a stud, nail her, then reap the benefits. Nice. Nice. Gimelstab plays in World Team Tennis. And Billie Jean King, who founded World Team Tennis, said his comments on the recent radio show were clearly inappropriate. Now he has apologized. I do not feel the views I expressed last week accurately represent the person I am or strive to be. However, I understand well how and why they offended so many people. There is no excuse for my actions. I'm extremely disappointed in myself. I take full responsibility for all the words spoken, and while I can't take any of them back, I hope my heartfelt remorse can begin to heal any wounds I have caused. Please let me play on the tour. Dateline Washington, a Republican congressman, has apologized for posting a speech on his website without acknowledging it was largely written by a fellow Republican. But Representative Jeff Miller from Florida says he did nothing wrong in delivering the heavily borrowed address at a University of West Florida graduation in 2004. To which my response is, 2004, University of West Florida? And we're supposed to care? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this week, two people who rarely appear in public, let alone under oath, testified before Congress. David Addington is Vice President Cheney's chief of staff and is widely regarded as the hardest line person in a hardline operation on subjects relating, ranging from what to do about Iran to what to do about detainees. And the other person testifying was John Yoo. I'm talking to you, who, when he was at the Justice Department, wrote the now infamous torture memo, which redefined torture as something that to be torture has to mimic the effects of severe organ failure or death to be considered torture. Otherwise, babe, go to it. You now teaches law at UC Berkeley. So both of them were under oath, both of them testifying. Yu's testimony was marked by a number of exchanges so roundabout and frustrating that I'm sure by the end, a number of the members of the committee questioning him would have wished for waterboarding. Here's an example.
What's the answer?
First, can I make clear I'm not talking about...
And you don't have to make anything clear. Just answer the question, counsel.
I just want to make sure I'm not saying anything.
You don't have to worry about not saying... Just answer the question.
Okay. My thinking right now...
Yes, right now.
Okay. My thinking right now...
This moment.
Yes. This moment, Mr. Chairman, is that, first, the question you're posing...
What is the answer?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to make you...
I get it. Okay.
Question. Let me answer the question. I will answer the question.
No, you're wasting my time. Look, counsel, could the president order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I have ever...
I'm asking you that.
...given the advice that the president could bury somebody alive.
I didn't ask you if you ever gave him advice. I asked you, do you think the president could order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, my view right now is that I don't think a president would... No American president would ever have to order that or feel it necessary to order that.
Mr. You wrote the Bybee memo of August 2002. Is that right?
Mr. Ellison, as I described in the opening...
I need a yes or no, sir.
I did not write it by myself.
Did you write it at any part?
I contributed to the drafting of it.
Okay, so you contributed to a drafting of it. And you checked in with Addington about what you were going to cover? He said you did.
Can I, we're talking about the August 2002 memo.
Of course. Did you check in with Addington as he just said you did?
I unfortunately do not have the same legal guidance as Mr. Addington does, because the Justice Department has told me I'm not allowed to talk about any individuals. I'm only allowed to talk about...
Was Mr. Addington telling the truth when he said you checked in with him over what you were going to cover?
Let me describe it.
I know. I want you to say yes or no.
I gave the draft of the opinion to the White House counsel's office, which would be...
So when he just said you came in to tell us what he was going to cover, you cannot confirm that. Is that right?
No, I'm not saying that at all, Mr.
Well, answer my question. Yes or no.
And so it's up to the White House counsel to decide who within the White
House... Stop, sir. I'm asking you to tell me to confirm whether what Mr. Addington reported to this committee was right or not right. That's simple.
Mr. Ellison, I'm afraid I have to follow the guidance provided by the Justice Department on this question.
So confirm what Addington said, deny what Addington said, or say I cannot answer the question. And what privilege are you asserting?
I can't answer the question because of the instruction by the Justice Department
that
I'm not allowed to
Thank you. So at some point, this 2002 memo was implemented. Is that right?
What do you mean by implemented, sir?
Well, are you denying knowledge of what the word implement means?
No, I wanted to know.
What does implement mean, sir?
You're asking me to define what you mean by the word?
No, I'm asking you to define what you mean by implement. What do you understand the term to mean?
I mean, it can mean a wide number of things.
Okay, look, you contributed to the writing of the 2002 memo. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
The name on the memo was Bybee, but you contributed to the memo, right?
Yes, sir.
The memo was implemented at some point. Is that right?
What do you mean by implemented, sir?
What I mean by implemented is the guidance that was set forth in that legal memorandum was followed and put into action. Do you understand what I mean by implemented now, sir?
So you're asking me, was the memo just told followed?
You.
Was the memo followed by...
I'm not going to get into semantical games with you in this 5 minutes. I need you to answer the question or refuse to. Was the memo implemented?
The memo was signed and provided...
I know what signed means, and so do you. Stop wasting my time, Mr. Yu.
I'm not trying to, sir.
Was the memo followed? Will you accept followed?
I don't have personal knowledge about how it was followed, but I expect...
I didn't ask you about how. I asked you whether it was followed, sir.
Sir, you're asking me about things that other people would have done, not me.
So the fact is, so the memo was never put into effect. Is that, are you making that claim?
No, sir. Let me go back and refer to my opening statement.
Forget it.
Is there anything you think that the president cannot order in the terms of interrogation of these prisoners in a state of war?
So, sir, you're asking my opinion now, not what we addressed in the opinions. Because
right now. What's your opinion now?
The opinions in 2002 and 2003 do not address that question.
What's your opinion now?
Sir, because they were not at the time.
What is your opinion now?
Sir, let me finish. I'm just trying to finish the question, my answer, sir.
Now you're trying to stretch out 5 minutes.
No, I'm not. I have no idea what time.
You guys are great on Beat the Clock.
I don't play basketball, but I watch it.
That was a game show. Maybe it was BYT.
I guess it was before my time, sir.
That's it, BYT.
So... Sir, answer the question. So those questions are not addressed in those memos. They were not before us. Today, I would say there's a number of things I don't think any American president would order in order to protect the national security, and I think one of those things is the torture of detainees. I do not believe, and I've said so many times, that the president, I don't think the president, or I say should ever.
Mr. Yu, this is the second time today, or the third, that you've said that you don't believe an American president would order certain heinous acts. Would you answer the question, not would he order it, but could he order it under the law, in your opinion?
I think it's not fair to ask that question without any kind of facts, any kind of... I mean, you're asking me to state some kind of...
So in other words, there is nothing conceivable...
No, sir, I'm not saying...
No, let me finish the question, because you don't know what I'm going to ask. There is nothing conceivable that to which you could answer no, an American president could not order that without knowing facts and context?
Sir, I told you I don't agree with that because you were trying to put words in my mouth about attempting to get me to answer some broad question covering all circumstances, and I can't do that.
Yeah, putting words in your mouth is torture. Well, not really, but if you want to know more about the guy, here it is.
He just wrote and ran.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He went and banned the band. Torture memo man. You've got you some detainees. You don't know what to do. Do you read them their Miranda rights or cover them with poo? Are you doing something illegal or proper through and through? There's only one guy to call. The one to ask is you.
Thank you, sir.
Who is you?
He's in that secret clan.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He had a clever plan.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. Oh, you've got some evildoers. They will not say boo. A little pain and torment might change their point of view. But before you waterboard them, you wonder, could they sue? One guy has got the answer. The one to ask is you.
Shut your mouth. I'm talking about God.
Who is you?
He just wrote and ran. Torture memo man.
Who is you?
He went and banned the band.
Who is you?
Torture memo man. All these laws and treaties, you want something new. This war may last forever. You need to turn the screw. He's teaching Berkeley, he'll drop the other shoe. The Bill of Rights expired. The one who knows is you.
Who is you?
Catch him if you can.
Who is you?
Torture memo man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From the Telegraph, conservative newspaper in London, Bill Clinton is so bitter about Barack Obama's victory over his wife Hillary, he's told friends the Democratic nominee will have to beg for his wholehearted support. The Telegraph has learned that the former president's future campaign role is a sticking point in peace talks with Mrs. Clinton's aides. The Telegraph has further learned the former president's rage is still so great that even loyal allies are shocked by his patronizing attitude toward Obama and believe he risks damaging his own reputation by his intransigence. A senior Democrat who worked for Clinton has revealed that he recently told friends Mr. Obama could, quote, kiss my A blank blank, unquote, in return for his support. A second source said the former president has kept his distance because he still doesn't believe Obama can win the election. It's long been known that Clinton is angry at the way his own reputation was tarnished during the primary battle, and several of his comments were interpreted as racist, but his lingering fury has shocked his friends. The Democrat told the Telegraph he's been angry for a while, but everyone thought he would get over it. He hasn't. I've spoken to a couple of people who he's been in contact with, and he is as mad as hell. He's saying he's not going to reach out, that Obama has to come to him. One person told me that Bill said Obama would have to, quote, kiss my A, close quote, if he wants his support. You can't talk like that about Obama. He's the nominee of your party, not some houseboy you can order around, unquote. Well, it's hearsay, but it's lovely hearsay. And from the Asia Times, Dateline Bangkok, recent reports have exposed the fastest-growing niche genre within Japan's massive and multifaceted adult film industry is pornography for and featuring the elderly. The market for elder porn, some call it grandpa porn, has doubled over the past decade, and the sector seems to be enjoying what could be called a golden age. But wait. One more piece of news from outside the bubble from the Times of London. Clamping, wheel clamping of illegally parked cars has been abolished in part of central London after Westminster Council became the first authority in Britain to remove the clamps in a radical reform of parking policy. It represents a growing trend away from clamping that's been welcomed by motoring groups. Authorities now use the device only on persistent offenders. Westminster was one of the London councils to pioneer clamping more than 25 years ago. Says it's overseen a 70% reduction since 2005, and it was time for the practice to be scrapped. A Westminster City Councilperson says, tells the Times, it's much fairer to give offenders parking tickets rather than use wheel clamping. Without doubt, he says, it's the most hated parking enforcement technique. People feel like they get a double hit because they have to pay for the ticket and to have the clamp removed. Vehicles will be removed from the street now only if they present a serious obstruction or are parked in a disabled driver's space. Even then, motorists will face only the cost of a parking ticket and will not be charged for the removal. The Brits get it. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, in tribute to a guy I admired and liked in the context of the few chats that we'd had together, my favorite piece from the recent work of the late George Carlin.
I'm a modern man, a man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free, a diversified, multicultural, postmodern deconstructionist, politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced, I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive, I'm hyperactive, and from time to time, I'm radioactive. Behind the eight ball, ahead of the curve, riding the wave, dodging the bullet, pushing the envelope. I'm on point, on task, on message, and off drugs. I got no need for coke and speed. I got no urge to binge and purge. I'm in the moment, on the edge, over the top, but under the radar. A high-concept, low-profile, medium-range ballistic missionary. A streetwise smart bomb. A top gun bottom feeder. I wear power ties, I tell power lies, I take power naps, I run victory laps. I'm a totally ongoing Bigfoot slam dunk rainmaker with a proactive outreach. A raging workaholic. A working rageaholic. Out of rehab and in denial. I got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, a personal assistant, and a personal agenda. You can't shut me up. You can't dumb me down, because I'm tireless and I'm wireless. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers. I'm a non-believer and an overachiever, laid back but fashion forward, up front, down home, low rent, high maintenance, supersized, long-lasting, high-definition, fast-acting, oven-ready and built to last. I'm a hands-on, foot-loose, knee-jerk head case, prematurely post-traumatic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. But I'm feeling, I'm caring, I'm healing, I'm sharing. A supportive, bonding, nurturing primary caregiver. My output is down, but my income is up. I take a short position on the long bond, and my revenue stream has its own cash flow. I read junk mail, I eat junk food, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I'm gender-specific, capital-intensive, user-friendly, and lactose intolerant. I like rough sex. I like tough love. I use the F word in my email, and the software on my hard drive is hardcore, no soft porn. I bought a microwave in a mini mall. I bought a minivan at a megastore. I eat fast food in the slow lane. I'm toll-free, bite-sized, ready-to-wear, and I come in all sizes. A fully equipped, factory-authorized, hospital-tested, clinically proven, scientifically formulated medical miracle. I've been pre-washed, pre-cooked, pre-heated, pre-screened, pre-approved, pre-packaged, post-dated, freeze-dried, double-wrapped, vacuum-packed, and I have an unlimited broadband capacity. I'm a rude dude, but I'm the real deal. Lean and mean, cocked, locked, and ready to rock. Rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I take it slow. I go with the flow. I ride with the tide. I got glide in my stride. Driving and moving, sailing and spinning, jiving and grooving, wailing and winning. I don't snooze, so I don't lose. I keep the pedal to the metal and the rubber on the road. I party hardy, and lunchtime is crunch time. I'm hanging in, there ain't no doubt, and I'm hanging tough. Over and out.
George Carlin. Modern Man. And on a related, possibly related subject, a story about drugs from Oregon. How did that happen? As law enforcement authorities make progress in the war against methamphetamine, cocaine, mostly controlled by Mexican gangs, has been making a comeback. We've been successful in eliminating the home meth lab, driving the price up, says Oregon City Police Chief Gordon Weiris. Unfortunately, the Mexican gangs that pretty much control the trade here have stepped up to the plate, bringing cocaine back to the picture. Meth addicts have a need for a certain amount of energy, says Detective Jim Strovink. Heroin makes people laid back, so that's not really for them. They're finding they can get the same high with cocaine. That's where they're getting their jolt. So goodbye to the home meth lab. Hello to the Mexican cocaine gangs. It's good progress. This is your brain on the war on drugs. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude. Yeah, imagine this story about drugs from Oregon. That's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, on XM and Sirius satellite radio. Are they one yet? Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like us winning somewhere, if you'd agree to join with us then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago desks. The email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music heard here are available, along with details on the new upcoming record, Songs of the Bushmen. You heard two cuts of it here today. And, of course, you won't be seeing it on any Clear Channel-owned billboards. No, you'll get the information at harryshearer.com. And thanks to Pam Halstead. Hey, Clear Channel, you can't be on my show either. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.